Imagine a tattoo that receives phone calls. That's right. Although it's currently science fiction, Nokia is betting that it could happen. In fact, the company is so confident that they have patented the idea. Nokia's patent application describes a ferromagnetic tattoo that will transfer a perceivable stimulus to the skin, wherein the stimulus relates to the magnetic field, and voila, it'll work as a phone. Unbelievable, isn't it? You want to get a tattoo with all that? Go for it. Up next, we're going to be talking about abundance. The future is better than you think. Peter Diamandis joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. Now, here's a name you've probably heard a lot of. Peter Diamandis is the founder, CEO of the XPRIZE Foundation, co-founder, chairman of Singularity University, and a very special entrepreneur turned philanthropist. He has started more than a dozen high-tech companies, degrees in molecular biology, aerospace engineering from MIT, and an MD from Harvard Medical School. My honors to bring, of course, Peter Diamandis to Coast AM. Peter, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good to have you with us, too. Were you in St. Louis during the XPRIZE times?
I was. I was living in St. Louis for about 4 or 5 years. I was originally in D.C. When I came up with the XPRIZE concept. And then when I was looking for a community that was going to back this crazy idea, the St. Louis community really stepped up and provided the seed capital. And then moved out to L.A. in 2000, and it was one out here in Mojave Desert in 2004.
That's great. Now, I'm still in St. Louis and L.A., so I'm in L.A. now, and I go back and forth. And a lot of the people I know knew you well, and some people I used to work with, Fleischman Hillard guys and stuff like that, just simply loved your project. And when the day came that Bert Rutan and Paul Allen were able to collect on that, I thought it was just fantastic. How did that idea, Peter, come about?
You know, I've been a space cadet since my childhood. I was born in the 60s during the Apollo program and Star Trek, and it was my passion. And I really wanted to be an astronaut, and I figured out my chances of becoming a NASA astronaut were like, you know, 1 in 1,000. I had a better chance of being an NBA All-Star at 5'5" and being an astronaut. And I read about Lindbergh that in 1927, he actually crossed the Atlantic to win a prize. And, you know, I thought he woke up one day, decided to fly east from New York. But there was a Frenchman, Raymond Ortega, who put up a prize of $25,000 in 1919 for the first person to fly between New York and Paris. And he was laughed at. But ultimately, 9 different teams, including Lindbergh, spent $400,000 to win this guy's $25,000. And it was incredible success story. I said, if I can create a prize that would generate a new set of launch vehicles to carry passengers into space, and maybe I'll get a ride on one of those. And I came up with the idea back in 94, and then was looking for the seed capital. A friend of mine who had just become president of the St. Louis Science Center, Doug King, had come to St. Louis. You know, they backed Lindbergh. Maybe they'll back you. And it was that's exactly what happened. Al Kurth, who was with Fleischman Hillard.
God rest his soul, huh?
God rest his soul. Amazing man who believed in the concept so much. He took me by the hand and introduced me to extraordinary people from the Danforth family to, McDonald family, and really the patrons of St. Louis who backed this, you know, this crazy idea of creating this prize, and lo and behold, it worked.
Peter, it's a small world because Al and I were very close. His wife, Susan, I worked with when she was at a bank in St. Louis doing public relations. The guy had a heart of gold.
He absolutely did, and I give him full credit for the existence of the personal spaceflight industry. I had heard about Al Kurth and his vision and his ability to make things happen. And you know, when I finally got the meeting with him, I remember I was giving him the presentation in the boardroom, the St. Louis Science Center, about this idea of this $10 million prize to incentivize space flight and get teams around the world. And literally in the middle of my presentation, he stands up. He says, "Stop, stop!" I'm like, "Oh my God, what did I do wrong?" He goes, "I get it, I get it. We're going to make this thing happen." And incredible man.
He called some of those great city fathers at Civic Progress.
Exactly right. And they stepped up. And yeah. Now, St. Louis gave the seed capital. We turned $2 million from St. Louis into a $10 million purse. That $10 million purse drove 26 teams around the world to spend $100 million to build private spaceships. And the winning vehicle, Spaceship One, flew in 2004. And we now have a billion-dollar industry that came out of this this crazy idea.
It was a great idea. It really is. But you don't stop. What's next for you?
So, you know, I became enamored with the idea that small teams of individuals could do extraordinary things because they're so empowered by the technology in our hands right now. You know, Bert Rutan, who built this private spaceship in 2004, it was a team of 25, 30 engineers who literally in a garage in a hangar in the Mojave Desert built a spaceship that could carry three adults into space twice in 2 weeks. And I said, you know, if you can do that, what else can small teams do? So we're The XPRIZE Foundation is, you know, identifying what are the world's biggest problems, what are the grand challenges that haven't been solved yet, and we design competitions. We put up large cash prizes with a very clear set of rules. I'll give you an example. We
Sure.
just announced the Qualcomm Tricorder XPRIZE, and funded by the Qualcomm Foundation. Any Trekkies listening will know the Tricorder is the device that that Bones, Dr. McCoy, and Spock used to use to diagnose people.
I remember that, and they'd wave it over them.
Yeah, exactly. You get all these funny sounds, and they'd say, you know, Jim, this guy's got a rare disease. And anyway, it was the future of medicine in the Star Trek universe. So we believe that the technology to create the first version, call it, you know, version 1.0 of the Tricorder exists today. And so a $10 million prize has been put up. We announced it at the Consumer Electronics Show. I gave the opening keynote with Paul Jacobs. And it's offered for the first team that can build a handheld mobile device that you can cough on, speak to, do a finger blood prick, and it can diagnose you better than a team of board-certified doctors.
Amazing.
And the cool thing is we have 150 teams that have registered in the first 2 months from 22 countries around the world who are going after this competition.
Peter, where do we stand in America compared to some of these other countries? Because, you know, as you just said, they're scattered all over the place. But how competitive are we as a nation?
You know, we're still the most entrepreneurial and competitive nation. And I say we still are because it's not a fait accompli that we, you know, will be in the future. You know, when I look at the number of teams that are competing in these X Prizes, still, you know, two-thirds are coming from the United States. We've launched seven of these competitions, and the majority, because we still have that entrepreneurial spirit, that spirit that says you can do anything here. But, you know, there is a lot of technology and a lot of capability that's coming online in other parts of the world. And, you know, I get concerned that sometimes we have so many, you know, we've gotten kind of risk adverse here in the U.S., a lot of lawyers, a lot of legislations, a lot of regulations that stop people from taking risks. And you know, to really drive a breakthrough, you know, I'm fond of saying the day before something is truly a breakthrough, it's a crazy idea. And you have to take risks. You have to not fear failure, because if you're afraid of failing and you're afraid of taking risks, you're gonna take incremental steps. You're not going to take radically different steps.
Our special guest tonight, Peter Diamandis, his book that he wrote with Stephen Kotler, Abundance, The Future is Better Than You Think. It is amazing, Peter, how the mind of a human being can change things for the better for all of us. I mean, I look at things that have progressed over the last 100 years, and it's absolutely staggering the things that have happened to where we are today. I mean, there's no end, is there?
No, there's not. I mean, we forget how rapidly the world has been improving, and we sort of set higher and higher standards, and we accept where we are. If you think about what's happened over the last 100 years, as just a few of the metrics, for people to remember what's happened over the century, the human lifespan has more than doubled. The childhood mortality rate, the number of children dying, has come down by a factor of over 10. The average income for every person on the planet, adjusted for inflation, has more than tripled. Every nation, every single country on this planet has gotten healthier and wealthier over these last 100 years. The cost of food has come down 13-fold. Electricity has dropped 20-fold in price. Cost of transportation 100-fold, and communications 1,000-fold. So, I mean, the ability for people to have the basics, you know, I remind people that, you know, people that if you think about poverty in the United States today, people under the poverty line in the United States, and there's plenty of people, and I, you know, they're living hard lives, but They still have electricity, running water, refrigerators, air conditioning. Mm-hmm. Most have cell phones and cars. And go back 100 years, and the wealthiest people on the planet had none of that stuff.
You know, I think of times of Nikola Tesla, and had that guy lived.
Man, I've had that same thought.
Yeah, he would have won some of your prizes, I think.
He would have reinvented the planet a few times over.
He sure would have. Do we have Teslas anymore?
I think we do. We have, you know, what's interesting is you can look at the rate of innovation in the world. When I say innovation, the rate of new breakthroughs and creations are a factor of a few things. One is how many people we have. You know, when you're creating something, typically the process of innovating, if you're an entrepreneur listening or, you know, just a thinker listening, a lot of the time innovation is when you have a conversation with people. You trade ideas. You build on their idea. They build on your idea. So what you can actually map as the population of Earth has gone up, so has the rate of innovation. And as people have moved from the rural areas, the countryside, into the cities and have become more concentrated where they can meet and trade ideas more frequently, the rate has gone up. And in abundance, I talk about something that is going to be the biggest force for innovation, which I call the rising billion. And it's the notion that, you know, in 2010, just a couple years ago, we had 2 billion people connected on the Internet. And by 2020, in the next 8 years, we're going to go from 2 billion to 5 billion people connected on the global Internet.
Jeez, that's huge.
It is. You know, these are 3 billion new people who have never been heard from before. In part, they've never bought anything online. They've never read any of this stuff online. And these are new minds that are plugging into the global economy that are going to be injecting tens of trillions of dollars. But more than that, you know, genius is sort of is a rarity, but it's distributed around the world. So we're going to start to be able to plug into more geniuses around the planet, wherever they might be.
Peter, last week we dodged an X flare from the sun. It was only an X5. If had it been bigger, it was aimed directly at us. Could have caused some problems. Could have taken down the grid. The one downside about technology is we become so dependent on power and the grid and things like that. There is that possibility that one day it could be gone for whatever reason, whether some rogue nation sends an electromagnetic pulse and blows something up over our atmosphere, or the sun does it. How do we combat that?
Yeah, you know, there is the risk that something natural or man-made causes disaster. And, you know, these are low probabilities, but they're not zero probabilities. And frankly, it's critical for us to be thinking and planning. I mean, one of the things that is important is to build robust and distributed capability, where it's not going to protect you against an electromagnetic pulse, so to speak, but it can protect you against terrorist activities if power is produced locally mm-hmm. for the individual and it's robust enough. Just like, you know, the Internet was built by the military, as you well know, to be a robust, decentralized communication system that you can't easily take down. We need the equivalent in electricity because, like it or not, society is completely and totally dependent on technology right now. I mean, in L.A., for example, where we are, I think the number I heard was there's a two-day supply of food here.
That's it. You're right. You're right.
If you cut off transportation here. So that shocks people, but it's the truth.
Well, that's why we depend on so much of technology. You know where Clayton, Missouri is, obviously. At Big Bend and Clayton Road, there's a drugstore there. And I was out there one day, and their power was out. Their power was out. They couldn't service us. They did not know what to do.
Yep.
They couldn't do the old swipe credit cards. And, you know, in those days, you could swipe. You wouldn't get it on your bill for a week and a half. People could not give change mentally. They had no idea. You know, if it was $16.32, you give it 20, they just stand there looking at you. That's what concerns me.
It is. You know, you don't get anything for free. And as the standards of living have gone up, you know, that has been a function of technology. And the reality is, you know, we can have a level of livelihood for the planet that's independent of technology, but that means we're living half our lives in terms of lifespan. It means we're not eating as nutritious food. It means we don't have access to information that we have. There is a cost and a trade, but in terms of, you know, its ability to increase the quality of life for people, not just us here, but, you know, billions of people around the world, that's what technology is giving us right now.
Do you think we should be going to Mars? We should be going back to the moon?
I think that it's part of the human species to explore. It's what has driven us. You know, we have sort of an exploration gene sort of that drove us out of Africa into Europe, Asia, Americas, and such. And it's natural. I think about the fact that, you know, thousands of years from now, or millions of years from now, if there's a memory that far out, we're going to look back at these next few decades as the moment in time that the human race moved irreversibly off the planet. That's happening now. There are many private individuals, independent of the government, who are investing heavily in opening up the space frontier. And it's a magical time. You know, life has only moved from one biome to the other. You know, when we move from lungfish out of the oceans onto land, now life during our lifetime is moving off of the Earth to the stars. And, you know, people say, well, why should that matter? Well, first of all, you know, everything we hold of value on this planet, metals, minerals, energy, real estate, the things that we fight wars over, are near infinite quantities in space. It's a human destiny to go out there. I think for us to continue human growth, getting access to the resources that are in space instead of, you know, raping the Earth, if you would, is very much an option.
You're a scientist, you're an engineer, you're a medical doctor. Are you bullish on life on this planet? You seem to have an upbeat attitude.
I do. I have a very upbeat attitude. I mean, the book Abundance is really the result of the work I've been doing for 20 years. I have, through the XPRIZE Foundation and through Singularity University, worked with some of the most extraordinary scientists, entrepreneurs, billionaires, philanthropists around the world. And I've watched as small teams have done incredible things to solve many of our grand challenges. And as I looked at the data, you know, I remember this one conversation a couple was having saying, is it morally right for us to bring a child into this world? And I was like, what world are you seeing that I'm seeing so differently? Because I think this is the most extraordinary time that we have, that the ability of an individual to live an extraordinary life now more than ever. And as I looked at the data, what I saw was this extraordinary progress over the last 100 years of how, you know, the quality of life has increased globally. And the forces that increased the quality of life are only accelerating. And so the book really is a very detailed look at how technology is changing our world for the better, how a series of forces are creating a world of abundance, not in 100 years, but in the next 20 to 30 years. And I wanted to get the message out so people could really change their view of the future, because as you know, what you think about the future affects how you live into it.
Oh, absolutely. And as you know, Peter, so many people think about the end times, the apocalypse. It's kind of refreshing to pick up something exciting about the future. We're going to come right back. Peter Diamandis, our special guest. We're talking about his work, Abundance, The Future is Better Than You Think, that he wrote with Stephen Kotler. I'm George Norrie. We shall be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Peter Diamandis. Peter, during the break, Jerry Purnell, science writer, sent a message to say hello to you.
Jerry's a phenomenal writer, obviously, and someone who inspired me reading his science fiction when I was growing up.
He and Larry Niven, just two great guys. And Jerry lives out in Los Angeles.
Yep, I see him once in a blue moon.
Good. That's super. Okay, so, you know, you think the world is getting better in spite of, you know, the economy and the drums of possible war and everything else. There is a bright spot here, isn't there?
Well, I think the bright spot is there constantly. I think the reality is that the news media is constantly feeding us all the negative news. And you know this. We're, as humans, our brain structure is programmed to pay far more attention to negative news.
Yes.
You know, because as we were evolving, if you missed a piece of good news, you survived. You missed a piece of bad news, and
you're in trouble.
You're in trouble. Your gene pool is no longer being put forward. And consequently, we pay a tremendous amount of more attention to negative news, and which is why most of the news media is 10 to 1 negative to positive, and we pay very little attention to the positive news. And today, with the extraordinary global connectivity we have, every local warfare, every murder, every small economic downturn is fed to you on your iPad, your iPhone, your television, your radio, your newspaper. And, you know, no wonder people are depressed. That's all you're doing is getting this constant flow of negative news, even though there is a extraordinary influx of positive news in almost every realm. And we just don't pay attention to it. And consequently, you know, we are what we listen to.
You call the book Abundance. Tell me why.
Well, when I looked at what's coming down the pike, what I've seen is that the basic needs of every man, woman, and child has the potential within the next 2 to 3 decades to be met. And I'm not talking about creating a life of luxury for 7 to 9 billion people. I'm talking about creating a life of possibility where we can have the basic food, water, energy, healthcare, education that we need. And you may know that the cover of the book, it looks like it's wrapped in aluminum.
That's right.
And I have a story in the first chapter. In fact, I want to let everybody who's listening know that you can download the first chapter of the book for free at abundancethebook.com is the website, and you can go stick your email in there, and you'll get the first chapter. And
which is our grandest challenge.
Exactly. And when I open up the book, I say, you know, in the mid-1800s, this is a great story of Napoleon III, who invited the King of Siam over for dinner. And Napoleon III fed his troops with silver utensils. Napoleon himself ate with gold forks and knives. And the King of Siam, who was the royal guest, was fed with aluminum utensils. Because aluminum was the rarest metal on the planet back in the 1840s. It was worth more than platinum and gold, which is why the tip of the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C. is capped in aluminum, because it was built in that time period, and aluminum was the rarest metal. Even though the Earth is, you know, 8.3% aluminum by weight, all of the aluminum on the planet is in the form of bauxite. It's bound with oxygen and silicates into this clay-like material called bauxite. You don't find pure aluminum in the ground. And it was so difficult to extract pure aluminum, it was worth more than gold and platinum. And then this technology called electrolysis came along and made aluminum so cheap that today we don't think about it. You know, aluminum cans, aluminum foil, we throw it away. We don't.
Yeah.
You know,
we toss it. Who cares about it, we think, right?
And we went from something that was scarce in the 1800s to something that was abundant. And the book basically lays out the technologies, the forces that can make energy abundant, water abundant, healthcare abundant, education abundant, and looks at how it's been moving and how it's really accelerating to change the face of the planet.
Do you sometimes, though, have to fight the social issues? Because I think you're right, Peter. I think one day we can make energy abundant, maybe even make it almost free. But I don't know if it'll ever happen like that, because there's too much money to be made on energy.
Well, there is, but what's going on, like in every field, as technology starts to empower the individual and empower entrepreneurs and small groups, there's cracks in the armor. You know, all of a sudden, energy becomes cheaper and cheaper, and it may not be free here, but it may turn out to be free in Africa, may be free in other parts of the world, and then all of a sudden we start looking at it and saying, well, why is it so much cheaper there? You know, interestingly enough, solar energy, and I talk in the book about solar being so extraordinarily powerful, and people don't realize that, you know, as a human species, we use about 16 terawatts of power per year, and that falls on the Earth every 88 minutes in terms of solar energy. We have 5,000 times more energy that hits the Earth's surface from the sun than we consume as a species every year. And the cost of solar dropped 50% last year. An MIT study that came out last month said that by 2028, eight years from now, the cost of solar in sunny parts of the U.S., solar electricity, will be about 6 cents a kilowatt hour, compared to a national average of 15 cents a kilowatt hour. So, I mean, there's tremendous potential there. And, you know, I think it's I think that it is going to change. I don't depend on the government to change it. I depend on entrepreneurs who come out with new ways to give each of us choices that we ultimately choose and utilize.
I've got a friend who lives in Hawaii, saving $250 a month on their utility bill simply by putting in a solar water heater. Now, the water heater costs $4,500, but they're going to get their money back.
Yep, and not only electricity is going to become cheaper, but, you know, water. I gave the opening, one of the opening talks at the TED conference this year, and the morning I gave my talk, I had a chance to meet up with an extraordinary entrepreneur and DIY innovator by the name of Dean Kamen. Folks listening may know Dean because he's the creator of the Segway scooter, but he's far more. He's invented, he's got over 1,000 patents. He's invented.
He's a great thinker.
A great thinker, medical technologies. And he will be best known for technology that is going to be deployed over the next few years called the Slingshot. He built a device about the size of a small dorm room refrigerator, so, you know, 3 by 3 by 3 feet, that is able to literally turn anything wet into pure drinking water. So imagine this. This is a device that uses only 100 watts of energy, you know, less than a hairdryer. And it has two hoses. One hose you stick into anything wet, the latrine, salt water, arsenic-infected water. Out of the other hose comes water so pure that it meets the medical standards for injectable water.
Amazing.
And the device that he's built a number of them, can produce water at less than 2 cents a liter, 1,000 liters a day. And what's incredible, what he allowed me to speak about at the TED conference was that, so he's built a dozen of these machines, he's tested them, and the chairman of Coca-Cola has agreed to actually build a few hundred of these devices and try them out in the developing world in a number of countries. And if these devices work well, Coke and the chairman of Coke has agreed to distribute these in 208 countries. And imagine...
That's huge.
It is huge. It literally could provide clean drinking water to billions of people. It could change the face of water scarcity on this planet.
And he's doing it primarily to help people, isn't he?
Yeah, it's his mission. I mean, Dean's an extraordinary man. He's wealthy by his own mind, his own inventions.
Yeah.
And he's a very giving man. He's the head of the first robotics competition. He's engaged tens, if not hundreds of thousands of high school kids to inspire them to study science and engineering through FIRST, which is an extraordinary program. And then this technology with Slingshot is really, he realized that half of the disease burden on the planet, half of the people who are sick in the planet Earth are because they're drinking disease-bearing water. They're, you know, water with parasites, water with bacteria.
Sure.
And that's extraordinary.
Would it also work if you sucked out water from the ocean almost as a desalinization plant?
It is, exactly. It can take salt water and provide clean drinking water. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, and people forget, you know, we live on a water planet. 70% of the Earth is covered with water. We don't have a water shortage. We have a, just like aluminum was, you know, something that was scarce and technology made it abundant, these kinds of technologies with the Slingshot, Dean Kamen's technology, could make water, clean water, abundant for, you know, everyone on Earth.
Well, could you make this now not 3 by 3, but could you make it as big as a office building in order to, you know, do hundreds and hundreds of thousands of gallons a day?
You know, I know that that Dean has talked about scaling it. I don't know how large an individual unit scales, but even at, you know, 2 cents a liter for water, you can't. It's more expensive to move water than to make.
Oh, it. Sure. You mean one day, for example, Peter, if the Colorado River dries up, this entire region is up a creek, literally.
Yeah, but we, you know, look to your west, and we've got the largest body of water on the planet.
Exactly.
Right off the coast. And so this is a kind of thinking that I'm trying to get people to change their view. You know, I talked a little earlier about the Qualcomm Tricorder X Prize, this device that is a handheld device that can diagnose you better than a team of board certified doctors. And so people are all up in arms in the United States about the health care crisis. And it is a crisis. And, you know, I'm a medical physician, and I go to the emergency room here a while ago to because I just have two young baby boys, and it was a travesty. You know, it really was. It was crazy. But and if you look at it, in the United States, we're going to be short 91,000 doctors by 2020. And that's good compared to the rest of the world. You know, Africa has 25% of the disease burden and 1% of the healthcare workers. There's no way we can train enough doctors. But this is where technology like the tricorder comes in, because here's a device all of a sudden that's hooked up to the cloud, to the computational capability of the Earth, with artificial intelligence, with lab-on-a-chip technology, digital imaging, that can diagnose you better than a board-certified doctor.
So you would have this for yourself at home?
You'd have a mom at home at 2 o'clock in the morning has one of these devices, and, you know, their kid is sick, and this will say, listen, it's the common cold, stay home and drink fluids, don't go to the ER. And if you're in Africa or India and this is your village doctor, you know, the cool thing is if all of a sudden you cough on it and it does a DNA analysis or an RNA analysis of a virus it doesn't recognize, it can call the CDC and prevent the pandemic in the first place.
That is amazing. Now, could it also say you're having a heart attack or you're just about ready to have one, get to the hospital?
Yeah, so this is the future of medicine where instead, you know, right now medicine is reactive and it's at the end of a disease state. And the technology that's coming online, and it's really in the next few years, will be preventative and predictive. You know, you'll be constantly monitoring your blood chemistry, your EKG, your other parameters, and it will warn you in advance. And it will, if you're not responsive, it will call up the medical system and say, send an ambulance. So we're entering a world where, you know, you're going to know whether you're screwing up on your health, and it's going to be your choice if you want to not take preventative measures.
Yeah, I was talking to a doctor several weeks ago, and they were just talking about how they have developed molds where then they have cells, and they're growing body parts, noses and ears and things. I found that to be absolutely staggering.
Yeah, so I talk about this in abundance. There's a whole chapter. So the book I've organized in terms of here are the key exponentially growing technologies that are going to change your life, your kid's life, the future of your every industry. I mean, the technologies coming online right now are going to transform every single business on this planet over the next decade, in the next 2-3 years, and definitely over the next 10 years. And one of them I talk about is the whole realm of stem cell biology and synthetic biology. I was just speaking to a friend, Anthony Atala, who's the leading stem cell biologist in regenerative medicine, in organogenesis. And it's exactly what's going on. Another friend, Bob Hurry, just got a patent on this. So imagine being able to take a human skin cell, one of your skin cells, transform that skin cell into what's called a pluripotent stem cell. What that simply means is it's a cell that can become anything. It can become a kidney cell, a liver cell, a muscle, a heart cell, a lung cell. And you can actually coax those cells to regrow an organ. And they can use a scaffolding. And there are lots of different approaches, but ultimately, and we've been talking about an organogenesis XPRIZE, an XPRIZE that would be a $10 million prize won by the team that can go from a skin cell to a transplantable heart, liver, lung, kidney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any one of us in 10 years may be able to have a backup organ for any organ that is failing.
Just out there.
Yeah.
And grab it if you need it.
Grab it if you need it, and you grow it in preparation for the time that you might need it.
New hearts, new arteries, new everything.
But it's yours. It's your. It's
no rejection.
Yours.
Yeah.
And it's grown. And this is not expensive stuff to do. I mean, the first ones will be expensive, but literally, this is something that is going to be affordable by almost anyone. And if you think about it, the amount of money we spend to keep people on dialysis. And when people become unproductive and they go on Medicare because of this, it's far cheaper to grow them a new liver or kidney to allow them to live functional lives.
That is truly amazing. And, you know, you mentioned how, you know, we're into smartphones now and social networking. That's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I tell people a few facts and amaze them. Imagine, you know, we're going to have by 2013, a couple years from now, a year from now, we're going to have 70% cell phone penetration on the planet, 70% cell phone penetration in Africa. And if you think about the fact that a Maasai warrior in the middle of Kenya today has better mobile comm than President Reagan did 25 years ago.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. And if they're on a, if they're on Google on a smartphone, this Kenyan warrior has better access to knowledge and information than President Clinton did 15 years ago.
I remember Buzz Aldrin told me once, Peter, that in order to get off the moon, he and Armstrong, he had to use his pen to push it down into a button in order to launch. And you look at that with that kind of technology back in 19 in the 60s.
We went to the moon.
We went to
Incredible.
The moon with that. We should be able to go there tomorrow.
Yeah,
with the kind of technology.
That's well, it takes having a willingness to take huge risks.
Yes.
And that's the, you know, that for me, that's one of the things when I talk about, you know, that the America remains an extraordinary entrepreneurial nation. The only way we'll lose that is if we stop taking risks in this country, because that's what's made us great. You know, I remind people that 500 years ago, when the first Americans came over from Europe, we risked our lives. Thousands of people gave their lives opening up, you know, coming across the Atlantic, and then thousands gave their lives again opening up the American West. You know, and now, you know, a few people die in a shuttle, and we shut down the program for 2 years. I mean, this is really a problematic situation. In order to remain a great nation, we have to be able to take risks, because that's what's going to drive breakthroughs.
I would wish that these presidential candidates would talk one-tenth of the things that you say, Peter.
You know, it scares me, and that's unfortunate. You know, what we hear about now is doom and gloom and disaster, and you know, the candidates are talking to the lowest common denominator. They're using fear to get people's attention, which is unfortunate. You know, instead of
and you know, there's a big difference between fear and preparedness.
Yep.
Which I think is very smart. Well, Peter, we're going to take some phone calls with you when we come back in just a moment. Peter Diamandis, our special guest. This is the founder of the XPRIZE. His book, Abundance, The Future is Bigger Than You Think. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.